All right. Hello, everyone. Welcome to this week's edition of the Mad Tech Podcast, coming to you from Temixco. I'd actually would have liked a little bit of shadowy reverb on that to make it sound even more dramatic than it actually is. I'm Rachel Smith, COO of Exchange Wire, and I'm joined here by our special guest. Joined, rather, I should say, we've moved into our special guest's Temixco stand. Yeah. It looks pretty good, actually. Let me introduce Joe Root, co-founder and CEO Permutive, and things are going well so far. And Ollie Williams, commercial director, News UK. Welcome, guys.
Good morning.
How's everyone feeling? So, strict instructions not to party too hard last night.
Absolutely. If my boss is listening, you can all confirm that I wasn't out last night. I was shadowed by Joe's team.
You're looking very bright-eyed and bushy-tailed.
Yeah, that didn't
go. What the hell is going on there?
Yes. That didn't go unnoticed.
I'd like to say this is the earliest podcast we have ever recorded. It's never normally recorded this time of day. And of course, let me introduce Lindsay Rowntree, Head of Content Exchange Wire. How's it going over there, Lindsay?
Hello.
Listeners, that is Lindsay. It's not a stand-in. That is actually Lindsay.
I was not given the instruction not to party. Not because I was shadowed by any bosses. Rachel, Kieran, I hope you're listening.
Oh, I bet you were shadowed by Kieran.
I bet he's worse than me.
He might have overshadowed you.
I think ATS London broke me.
Yeah. I'll take a bit of responsibility for that. So we're recording this session right off the back, hot off the heels of ATS London, which will become relevant as we go through some of the news stories that we want to chat through. But let's kick it off with conversation of the first news story I wanted to bring up, which is a growing list of antitrust probes being brought forward by the US government to Facebook, Google, YouTube, Amazon, Apple, any big technology companies that you care to think of, basically. So there was a nice little piece in Axios this week giving us a rundown of where the litigation landscape is at with regards to various US government departments looking at various activities across all of those big tech groups. I could go into some detail of each of the cases, but that will probably take up a bit of time. The point of the conversation was, are we starting to see the breakup of big tech? And we've been talking about this quite a lot in a general capacity at Exchange Wire over the last 12 months, and we've definitely been talking about it with more explicit reference to some of the sort of privacy legislation that's been coming down the line here in the UK and also bubbling up in the US. But now it looks like we're moving from sort of in between privacy and anti-competition, and things are starting to get pretty serious. So I'm interested to hear what your perspective is, just in a general capacity, and also whether you think what impact you think this is going to have on activities in the UK if any of these lawsuits were to be successful and to result in the breakup of any elements of those companies. Big question. Joe, do you want to over to you.
So I think certainly from our perspective, when we look at the challenges our publishers face, a lot of that is around fragmentation of the market. So in the face of the duopoly, in the face of Facebook and Google, actually it's the fragmentation which is typically seen as the issue. Certainly from our perspective, a breakdown of big tech, especially Google, especially Facebook, actually creates a slightly more level playing field for all those involved. So certainly not against it. I'd be really kind of intrigued to see how they actually break that up or why. Also, if you look at the way in which data is shared amongst those, what Facebook and Google are able to build is just phenomenal in terms of scale. So I think kind of it would, without a shadow of a doubt, benefit in terms of competition. Whether it happens, God knows.
Yeah. It's a bit, because there's so many different cases being brought forward and they're being spearheaded by a number of different US departments, it's still a very unknown landscape. But you can see that there is the potential for an opportunity for the, like you say, for the playing field to be a bit leveled, depending on where within the ecosystem you sit. So, Ollie, really interested to hear your perspective working for News UK. What's your point of view on this?
Yeah, so I kind of sort of keep a close eye on what's happening in Europe. So for us, like, the more interesting one was around the recent kind of letter from Brave to the Irish regulators, because it's probably the most kind of specific example we've seen calling out kind of why a big company, a platform like Google, kind of aren't compliant with GDPR and kind of data regulations.
Yeah.
So for me, that's probably the most kind of interesting one in terms of like the kind of US kind of litigation. Like we have News Corp who kind of keep a close eye on that, but generally we're kind of more interested in terms of what's happening closer to home. For me, like, a breakup sounds quite extreme. I'm not sure if it is that extreme, but we certainly know that they're all going to come under kind of increasing like regulatory pressure, and it'll be interesting to see how that kind of changes their business kind of moving forwards.
Yeah. Lindsay, what's your point of view on this? Because we've talked before about what it would look like in a world where, you know, some of Google's, you know, sort of owned and operated assets are functioning independently and separately. Same for Facebook. What would it mean from your perspective? What would it mean for both advertisers and publishers alike if they were operating in a more, I suppose, separated, broken up ecosystem?
I think it would bamboozle them. At the moment, they're very, very used to, advertisers, for example, are used to putting their budget into this one big giant. It makes life easy for them. It's unfair to say that Google is the easy option, but it kind of is the easy option.
Yeah.
It's unfair to say that Facebook is the easy option, but again, it kind of is the easy option. So what they then do, and, you know, we've seen Google and Facebook both consolidate their tech offerings. Recently, Facebook are trying to bring Instagram, WhatsApp, Facebook Messenger all under one technical umbrella, which, you know, arguably going forward, it means if they were to have to break up, it would make it more complicated. They argue against it.
Prevent that, frankly.
And Google, again, with Google Ads Manager, they've specifically, so everyone says, Google should sell DoubleClick.
Yeah.
DoubleClick doesn't exist anymore. Yeah. I'm using air quotes. DoubleClick does not exist. Like, it's Google Ads Manager. Everything has been brought into one big solution for the publish side and the buy side. Will that make it, you know, what is more important to Google? Is it their ads business? Is it their browser business? What's the flip? But I think it would make it more difficult for publishers and advertisers to know
navigate their way around
next, basically. Mm. Ollie, you're nodding furiously.
Yeah.
You as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we know firsthand that we have to be able to offer scale. And Facebook, Google, they are often like an easy option for brands and advertisers. Like, and if you look at kind of News UK's move and being kind of one part of the Ozone project, I mean, that alliance is about providing that scale and that kind of ease of access to our inventory consistently across all publishers. So like we kind of appreciate that we have to kind of ensure that we can compete on scale of ease of activation, ease of transaction. They're all things that we have to do to make our inventory easy to purchase for agencies who themselves are under kind of increasing pressure. So we kind of see firsthand kind of what Lindsay's talking about.
I think the Google problem is fascinating, especially when you look at Chrome and third-party cookies and privacy. Then you look at Google Ads Manager as a business, and then you look at Google Search. If third-party cookies go down, it pushes everyone into search. If third-party cookies go down, though, it also harms that Google Ad Manager business. So it's this really strange like mix of all these businesses which kind of rely on each other but also have these competing interests. Like even within Google, it must be hugely fragmented.
And I was just about to say that. I mean, I reckon that they probably are in a state of dilemma, to be honest with you, internally within Google. They're, as Lindsay sort of, you know, alluded to, they're probably having to make decisions about what part of their business is most important to them.
Yeah.
And then I think they are actually in a genuine dilemma over how to handle the sort of power and control they've got over the various elements of the ecosystem. You know, I'm not saying that they won't be thinking about the best ways in which to, you know, sort of maneuver their sort of powerful position, but ultimately I think things are getting tough for them. They're going to have to make some choices at some stage down the line. It'll be really interesting to see how that impacts the industry.
Is it church and state? They'd have you believe that they are church and state. They're very, very separate. But when you look at what Apple are doing, you know, Apple are doing what they're doing for the sake of the user.
Yeah.
But Apple doesn't make any money from Safari. It makes its money from in-app.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Trying to encourage advertisers to go in-app rather than put their money in the browser. Advertisers are still terrified of an app, so as is, you know, inconsequential at the moment. But are Google doing the same thing? They might say they're very, very separate businesses, but actually the reason that they reneged on their third-party cookie directive almost, and what they're now doing with the privacy sandbox, is that because they had a chat and went, that's gonna really break the ads team if you get rid of the third-party cookie.
Oh, that's no, kind you're of a right. Big deal for us.
Think of that. Oh, you're right. Okay, let's have a chat and we'll bring something. What about a sandbox? We do love a sandbox. Let's bring one of those out.
Let's roll one of those out. We
Church
all love a sandbox.
State is the perfect way to put it. I think it perfectly encapsulates it. It's always been bizarre to me that Apple has been able to kill third-party cookies but keep IDFA.
Yeah,
it's just exactly. Wow, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Will they get rid of IDFA? That's the next question. Of course they bloody won't. Are you joking? No. that.
Yeah.
That is there.
Too beneficial. Too beneficial.
I think they'll keep IDFA, yeah. I do. I mean, will they have to? What will they be required to do? Will there be lots of pressure and lobbying for them to, you know, almost make it universal? I don't know. But I don't see that they will not get rid of it without a fight. I don't reckon it is their sole source of their main source of revenue for it's the place they're trying to get advertisers to put their money. Yeah. So I'm interested. Do you think they will get rid of it?
Personally, yes. I think if you look at the most recent. The WebKit, which is Apple's Safari browser, the underlying tech published their policy on, hey, what are we trying to block or kill? And in it, they're very explicit. We're trying to get rid of cross-domain tracking. And they talk about these tracking scripts and their desire to get rid of them. And then you have IDFA sitting there, which underpins the entire thing. And it is just so hypocritical that I don't see how you can keep it.
Very interesting.
Could they argue? Could they argue if they keep it, they actually have more control over privacy? Like, it's
if
they own identity and they control identity, yeah, then they're able to bake in privacy by design into everything they do, and they've sort of set unified ID.
But the question to me then is, like, why haven't they put it into the Safari browser?
Yeah, so that's a fair point.
Yeah, as you said, that it underpins everything.
Yeah.
So why is it not underpinning everything?
I feel like Apple's attack is on identity. They're trying to destroy this notion of identity. Mm. And I think in doing so, IDFA is the one piece where it doesn't add up. So I think they'll have to make a call on it over the next few months, right?
Yeah.
So you think it's identity? Or as I'd say, it's probably tracking. Like, yes, tracking is what they don't want to happen.
Yes, yeah,
that obviously, identity is a thing that you have to be able to do in order to track. But yes. It's
that makes it sound sexy.
It does.
Tracking. No.
No,
we've
already concluded you've got a good radio voice.
I've got a radio voice and a radio face. So
I'm saying that I don't have a radio voice.
I'm not going to comment on your radio voice.
No.
Sound guy is shaking her head. Lots of eye rolls there.
Sound guy says no. But anyway, this is all quite useful conversation, because the next story that I wanted to chat with you about, a couple of things that came up at ATS London fairly convincingly. So we had a session on stage, I want to say yesterday. It wasn't yesterday, it was the day before, wasn't it? What happened to Tuesday?
Oh, no, I was going to say, no, we talked about it was yesterday. It was Monday.
Anyway, we had a session on stage where we had a guy named Ali Shah, who's head of policy and technology at the ICO, come and have a chat with us about their perspective on the ad tech industry. Specifically, we were talking about the most recently released ad tech update report that they'd put forward. And we wanted to have an on-stage conversation about what it is that they're really looking to get from the ad tech industry in terms of issues and concerns around privacy. So it was a really interesting conversation, because we talked about some of the obvious things. So what's their interpretation of legitimate interest? Where do they think the ad tech industry is going wrong when relying on that? We sort of talked a little bit about the regulations that actually we ought to be a bit more focused on. We're quite obsessed with GDPR, but it turns out that there's a regulation that precedes GDPR called PECR, spelt P-E-C-R, not any other way.
Like your pecker.
Correct. No, which appeared on the Twitter wall at ATS London. Yeah. So just letting you know, Ari Paparo, it's not pecker. But I mean, you know, it was a fair point. Anyway, that's the Privacy and Electronic Communications Regulation, which preceded GDPR. And actually, there's a whole bunch of technicalities around that regulation that stipulates very clearly why most of the ad tech industry would be in really dodgy territory if they're relying on legitimate interest only. He ended the session by pretty much issuing a low-level warning that the time has come for the ad tech industry to get their act together. And, you know, what were his words? The tide is coming in. Yeah. So if you think you can just be lounging around on the beach in your legitimate interest sun lounger, then you want to think twice. And that was partly a call out because the report does actually stipulate that they want to see some changes in the way that the industry is dealing with privacy issues over the coming 6 months, and we're already 2 months into that six-month window. He also made the point that they're not looking to go, you know, hell for leather down a regulatory route. I mean, sorry, down an enforcement route. So they're not hunting around for ad tech companies to go and issue fines to, but they want to be taken seriously. So I'm really interested to hear your perspective on where you think the ad tech industry is with this. Are we taking it seriously, or are we lounging around on our legitimate interests? Sun lounger.
So, come on, Ollie. I mean, from a publisher's perspective, I mean, you'd have to say that the vast majority of ad tech probably isn't like GDPR compliant in the eyes of the ICO. Everyone is kind of making kind of strides to become compliant, and people are still figuring out what that actually means. But if you look across the landscape immediately, then yeah, I mean, like you'd question large chunks of kind of the ad tech sort of landscape. It's a tricky one. I mean, as a publisher, like we're reliant on ad tech to drive up our yield. At the same time, like I think that it's great that we have reports like this being driven by the ICO, and that actually publishers and the industry as a whole are being asked to feed in. I think when GDPR first became a thing, there was a real lack of understanding from the regulators on actually how publishers made their money and our kind of reliance on various parts of the ad tech kind of landscape to drive our revenues, to keep our content free. So at least when we have these reviews and these reports, it actually shows that actually, you know, the regulators actually now do have a really solid understanding of media, of ad tech, and how all of this kind of essentially keeps journalism sustainable. So there's pros and cons, but yeah, you'd expect kind of massive change over the next kind of 6 months as the kind of ICO start to kind of hone in and actually kind of pin down what isn't compliant and what is.
Yeah. Joe?
Yeah, I mean, I'd really echo what Ollie said. I'd say privacy to me feels like the most disruptive force in ad tech by country mile. Like, I think it'll define the next couple of years for ad tech. It is going to force the industry to rebuild itself. And I think it's shone a light on a lot of areas which are pretty dodgy. Actually, like ahead of GDPR and everything else, I think it is the web browsers who have shown us what a privacy compliant world looks like. So you look at Safari browser, and actually by killing the third party cookie, they've kind of broken ad tech, but they've also created a privacy compliant ad tech. I think GDPR is going to come in and mop up a lot of what is left over. Certainly, like, I'll go on record. Like, I think I'm a big fan.
Because you are a record. Thank Christ for that.
Because we are recording. Well, at least we hope we're recording this.
You've got a standing sound guy. It can go either way. She's saying, don't be me. Oh, don't talk. Is that because my voice? Saying, you know, that's rude. Like that you're so rude.
In there, Lindsay.
She's temporary.
Shaking heads.
Yeah. I've got eye rolls.
Yeah.
Sorry, Joker.
You are on record.
I'm a big fan of Johnny Ryan. I think what he's exposing is actually really legitimate and fair. So like the way in which he's broken down OpenRTB and shone a light on those 2,000 ad tech companies at the end of the exchange, watching the auctions, hoovering up publisher data. Actually, I think it is right that we start to investigate these companies. And I think it is massively in the interest of publishers. Ad tech has basically aggregated publishers' inventory and their user data. And now all of a sudden GDPR is saying, hey, you can't steal this data at scale anymore. You need to have a reason to be doing it. And I think that massively weights the world in favor of publishers, third-party data providers. Everyone else will have to go. And I think publishers are the ones who are left standing at the end of it.
Yeah, I mean, we have to look at this from two lenses. You've kind of got your short-term lens on and you think, like, wow. Like, I mean, we know what impact, like, Safari's ITP changes had on our yield on Safari. And you look at that and you think, kind of, shit. Like, I mean, we don't want to see that across the board. But then if you look at kind of it from a long-term sort of viewpoint, then you think, well, hang on a second, there's a real opportunity here for publishers to actually own their data, to regain control, and to stop, like, the vast majority of certainly the long tail of the ad tech industry fueling their businesses through essentially value created by publishers.
Yeah.
And we often don't see a lot of that value back from a lot of those ad tech companies.
And it's really interesting. Sorry, I will let you speak in a moment, Lindsay.
Don't,
just giving your voice
a rest. Don't bother.
Sound guy says no.
Fair enough.
Right,
fair enough.
Right.
But it is interesting though, Ollie, connected to what you were saying before, that, you know, there needs to be an appreciation of what's driving value and what's driving yield for publishers. And actually Ali Shah was quite explicit about this, although probably didn't emphasise it as much on stage as he did when he and I were having a sort of a pre-ATS chat, where he was saying, you know, we absolutely, I could hold our hands up and say the ICO were and other government regulators were probably a little bit ignorant in the early days, but we've educated ourselves on the degree to which this is critical for the industry. You know, we understand that there's a bit of a tension between, on the one hand, protecting the user, which is what their core purpose is. So he's very clear about that. That is the purpose of the DPA, which in the UK is the ICO. Their purpose is to protect the user. But there's a bit of a tension between that on the one hand, and then on the other hand, supporting and upholding this vibrant internet, which has free to access content, which is, you know, independent, thought-led, journalist-created, you know. So he really did emphasise that point. I think there's a bit of a tide of change there. Were you going to come in on something else there, Joe? Or shall we?
What I was going to say was, like, that before GDPR came into force, everyone was saying, oh, this is fantastic. It will put the control back into the publisher's court. Like, they will be able to control everything. They'll be able to say yes or no. They'll be able to have their own data. And while that is true and can be true, unfortunately, while they've got more control, they've also just been shouldered with all the liability. And that's not been fair on publishers at all. It's made their lives harder in many cases. And actually, because everyone is demanding that they're a data controller and not a processor, that's actually made your lives, I'm looking at Ollie, obviously, has made your lives harder. And so what's the comeback of that? How do you make sure that you're getting the good out of GDPR and not the bad? Yes. And not getting the ICO breathing down your neck. Because you just, on record, said to the ICO that, you know, all publishers are not compliant. So
ad tech companies, the industry as a whole. Yeah. We'll edit that out later.
No.
You know how I said we did that at the start? There was a little bit of a fib.
As a caveat.
It's all over to Sound Guy. Sound Guy says, no, then.
There's another shake of the head from Sound Guy. Sorry, I've completely forgotten the original question.
Oh, and now there's all sorts of hand gestures going on in the background.
Coffee orders, everything. Anybody like coffee?
I think Lindsay was asking, how do we row back from a position of non-compliance?
Yeah, where you have all the power, but then at the same time you have no power.
So I guess I kind of, when we look at this conversation, I kind of bundle in identity and consent. Like, for me, those two things have to go kind of hand in hand. And they're two quite different challenges. So, like, we know in terms of, like, how we capture consent, that we have to give users far more control and be far more transparent. And like all publishers, we're kind of taking big strides to ensure that happens. And then on the identity side, obviously, our business is fueled by identity. So we have to find kind of new ways of being able to identify users in a way that we get consent for whatever purposes or our uses of that data. So it's... Sorry, you're going to ask the question?
No, carry on.
No, that's fine.
She's nodding in agreement.
Absolutely. Yeah, it was a nodding agreement as opposed to...
I was about to say, funny you should mention identity. That's what I wanted to talk about next. And so, Joe, maybe you can come in on this as well. That was another thing that we talked about pretty much all day long at ATS London was... As we've already mentioned, the decisions and the moves that have been made by the major browser owners over the last couple of weeks to 5 months back when Safari blocked third party tracking in their browser, but more recently, obviously, Google's row back from that. And interestingly, their row back from that, we were talking about their sort of, you know, vested interests earlier on, but their row back from that. Them attaching to that the point that they didn't want a reliance on other less compliant, less privacy compliant ways of identifying users to rise up in the interim.
Yeah.
What they wanted to do was take a step back, have a consultation and a discussion with the industry, and also put forward their own proposals for an ID solution and just get a measure of what people think about that before completely killing the third party cookie. And also they recognised the importance of, you know, this vibrant internet and publishers revenue. And then Mozilla just kind of coming out the gates last week and going, that's it, third-party cookie tracking off, defaults, there you go.
Yeah, but yeah. 10 people that use Mozilla.
Who uses it?
Great news.
So, enter a lengthy conversation, sort of, you know, kind of weaved in and out of many panel discussions throughout the day, but also culminating in a dedicated panel session later on in the afternoon at ATS on Monday, where we talked about what the future for identity was for the ad tech industry. You know, who's leading the charge on that? What are the opportunities here? What should publishers be doing? What should advertisers be doing? And we also talked about what we like to call at Exchange Wire a new swathe of technology companies focused on ID solutions, the ID crowd, as opposed to the IT crowd.
Very good.
Yeah.
Nicely done.
Thanks. Thanks. Yeah, rehearsed that. Pretty slick, wasn't it? Oh, sound guy didn't like it. I got the thumb down.
Not a
fun. Got the thumb
sound guy,
down.
You are far too vocal in your
yeah,
own
exactly.
Words.
I love the way she's whispering as well. So, yeah, Joe, Ollie, let's talk about identity.
Oof, that's a big topic.
It is.
Huge. I think it's really important to separate identity for ad tech and identity for publishers. Identity for ad tech is dead. And I think people talk about GDPR kicking in. Really, it is all in the browsers. Right now, when we look across the swathe of our publishers and you look at who the DSPs can see, right now DSPs can only put identity on about 35% of the internet. So we talk about kind of Firefox having 10 users, which could quite well be true. And then we also talk about kind of Safari, and you add it up and it's 40% of the web. Actually, a ton of users are also going beyond that to opt out, which means that identity is only working now for about 35% of the internet for the ad tech ecosystem, which means ad tech can't function in the way in which it used to. But you look over at the publisher ecosystem, and actually identity works on 100% of users. Apple have given publishers the technical ability to drop cookies, to persist those on users. Publishers do have persistent identity. What ad tech needs to figure out is how does it work with publishers to get the output of that identity in a privacy compliant way. And we think you can make changes to OpenRTB protocol, which allow publishers to push that data in a privacy compliant way, for example. We have publishers who are doing it in PMPs and other places as well. So I think identity dead for the ad tech ecosystem.
As it exists today,
you mean?
As it
exists today. Yeah. Personally, I'm not a believer in the ID crowd. I think
Kieran's going to be so upset. I mean, it took him a long time to go, oh, no, hang on. Sound guy's claiming credit for that joke. Sound guy says she invented it.
Oh, the bloody Irish.
I know, yeah.
I love the name. Yeah. I just don't believe that it works or solves a problem over the long term. But I do think working closer with publishers does afford the opportunity to solve that problem.
Yeah, Ollie. I mean, I'm obviously heavily biased, but for me, like, identity and consent has to be owned by publishers. There's always been an over-reliance on ad tech for identification. And that I think that has to change over the kind of coming sort of 12 months. It's an interesting one. For us as a publisher, it touches so many areas. So as a publisher, we invest a lot of money in collecting data that often has now kind of a relatively short shelf life. If we can't kind of tackle the identity challenge, then we lose a lot of that kind of business value. We have like the ID crowd. Like, I kind of agree with Joe. It's for us, like, there's reasons that there's been limited traction from all of those ID solutions. Like, in an ideal world, like, of kind of fluffy bunny rabbits and unicorns, like, there'd be a single identity that everyone used on both the buy and the sell side. Like, it would help us
rather
improve page
four
performance.
Plus identity.
I mean that's kind of the problem, right? I mean, you've got like four unified ID solutions. Yeah. Like, it's
not quite a unified ID solution, then, is it?
That makes it lose its definition somewhat.
Yeah.
The thing I've never understood with them though is how do the IDs work without third-party cookies? Like, it just doesn't make sense to me. Like, how can an ID or a single ID tell that user A is the same user on a different site if the third-party cookie doesn't exist? Like, the technology is broken to support it.
So that's the thing, I think, is that there's a couple of things going on at the same time, right? Mm. So there's people working on ID solutions. Like you say, there's this sort of four major ID solutions, alternative ID solutions.
The ID crowd.
Yeah. Thanks, Lindsay.
Can you call them by their name, please?
Sorry, yeah. Thank you. Sound guys loving this. And then at the same time, there's got to be a whole load of effort and energy put into what does the world of ad tech look like beyond cookie tracking, right? Because that is, you know, that is going to be a reality, and there's so many things that are interdependent on that. We've got to solve a couple of things: ID and how to operate in a cookieless environment, which is more or less what that panel focused on to some extent.
Yeah. So, I guess, Ollie, my question to you is, the New York Times are testing switching off anything to do with third-party tracking. So they've gone fully context. So all the ads, they're working with advertisers on a fully contextual and geo basis. And they say that they've not dropped revenue. Do you
believe them?
Do you think, yeah, do you believe them? And do you think that could be a legitimate way forward for publishers?
It's hard to know. So, I mean, I'd compare the New York Times to the Times. So we have two very different businesses at News. We have the Times and the Sun. Like, the Times, similar to the New York Times, has a paywall. We have known users with known data. Like, and the Times, like, is predominantly like a direct business. Like, we don't have open marketplace advertising on the Times. So the Times would be far less affected. But if you then compare that to the Sun, like, it'd be too early for us. I mean, we'd lose far too much money if we made the decision, like, immediately to just go to, like, pure contextual. Like, the vast majority of our revenue still comes from the open marketplace.
But I think, from the advertiser perspective, I will now speak as an advertiser, despite the fact that I'm not one, nor have I ever been one.
But it's nice to try a new outfit on from time to time, isn't it?
I used to work for an agency, it's fine. Just the accounts, just count.
Expert on everything.
From their perspective, you know, actually, if I were to buy in the sort of do not track the anonymous web, my CPMs would be far lower. Probably, anecdotally, probably a third of what they would be if I were to buy directly. So I could do that and save a lot of money. But then what can I then track from a do not track web? So if I'm buying in a contextual environment, there's a lot to be said for contextual. Like, there's some good stuff
absolutely.
You can do with it.
People undervalue
but as an advertiser, what am I then getting out of it? If I'm being told I need to advertise and plan and measure on outcomes basis, and not measure on an impression-led basis.
So this is where the lines get blurred.
What do I do next?
So publishers have always been really bad at proving the value of their media, and that's where you have to give credit to the platforms. I mean, they've made it very easy to transact with them, and they've become very, very efficient at proving that their media works. And publishers have to put their hands up and take responsibility for that. So when we look at kind of our product strategy, a lot of our product strategy now is kind of pivoted around actually proving that our media creates value for both for advertisers. And that's, I mean, I'd kind of almost treat that as an entirely like sort of point to identity and consent and cookies. That's just us having to do a better job of what we do.
And I sort of feel like actually we've now moved into the second part of the podcast, really, which is what you guys are more specifically working on. So that was really helpful sort of background on what's happening at News. And this identity conversation really dovetails anyway into what's going on at Permutive. But give me a bit of perspective on what is really important to you guys at the moment. Do you want to kick off, Joe?
Yep. Isn't a bit of background on Permutive?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, of course. So we're publisher focused.
You're not an ID crowd.
No. We're a publisher-focused ID crowd. No, we aren't. We're a publisher-focused data management platform. So we really believe that in the next 5 years, privacy is going to massively reshape the ad tech industry. We think that for a long time, publishers have underpinned data in this industry. So 25 cents on the dollar in ad tech right now goes on data. That data is built on top of publishers. And now all of a sudden, because of privacy, Apple has shattered the web into thousands of publisher-sized pieces. And we think that gives publishers the opportunity to rebuild what data looks like in this ecosystem in a privacy-compliant way. They have the legal relationship with the user, and they have the technical ability, thanks to Apple and these browsers, to process users' data. And we think that they're actually kind of the next step from contextual is publishers taking all that contextual data, modeling and providing audiences which rival the third-party data providers. And we see amongst our best publishers, actually, the opportunity with data is absolutely enormous. So we as a company have a pretty simple purpose, which is to enable publishers to go and take that.
Ollie?
Yeah, from our perspective, and a big part of what we've been doing is kind of driving a sort of cultural shift throughout News. So we've spent a lot of time and money trying to collect and process more first-party user data. And a big part of that has been kind of getting the whole business to support our efforts. We now have an editorial team who are kind of like data savvy. They understand that when they write content about certain topics, there's value in asking users certain types of questions to get valuable, commercially valuable data from that. We have a data science and engineering team who understand that data has to be collected in a way that is compliant and is made available for activation or that has activation value and scale. So a lot of focus on preference, opinion, and emotion data. Like, for us, that's where we see like publishers being able to create the most value, like demographic, socioeconomic data, gender data, contextual data. It's all heavily commoditized and easily accessible across the board. So for us, it's finding areas where our unique kind of sort of brands can collect unique first party audience data that is interesting to the buyer side. So a lot of work around ensuring that the data we collect is different, but also scalable.
Yeah. That's the point of the one big thing about GDPR is talking about kind of what you can and can't do with your data as a publisher. You know, it's not limited to ad tech. Like this impacts you so much further beyond that.
Oh, yeah,
your data is your lifeblood, not just from an advertising perspective and a yield perspective, but actually in general, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we use our data in the same way that a lot of brands would. I mean, we have like transactional products. We have like brand extensions. Like for us, like our data like fuels every single part of our business. Like we know that in 5 years time, we can't just be like a display business. Like we have to diversify our business model, and data is what informs the decisions we make in terms of how we diversify and also what drives the performance of any products we create to diversify. So yeah, so it's massively important.
And do you think some of this is sort of driven, you sort of mentioned it earlier on, is it driven publishers to sort of mature their business models a little bit when it comes to use management of data, and also, like you say, trying to, you know, more sort of adequately articulate the value of what you're offering to advertisers, and trying to make, I suppose, also to your internal processes, you were talking about that culture change, but your internal process a little more sophisticated as well. Do you think it's an age of maturing?
Yeah, if you look over the last 2.5 years, our business from a data perspective has completely transformed. It's almost unrecognisable. Mm-hmm. And I actually see like GDPR and kind of the journey that kind of all publishers have gone over the last 2 years is a really positive thing.
Yeah.
Like it forced us to be more responsible for how we collected data. Yeah. We lost a lot of data, which massively improved the quality of the data that we do have.
Yeah.
So now we get much more value from the data that is within our kind of ecosystem. I see it as a massive sort of positive.
Joe, something that you're seeing across other publishers that you're working with as well is sort of a maturity in their businesses and a real shift in the way that they're thinking about their data assets?
Yeah, definitely. I think what GDPR and what privacy in the form of browsers has done is we've gone from this massive oversupply of data in the market to massive undersupply of data in the market. Data just doesn't exist for over half of the web. And actually for publishers, all this has been this great forcing function to reevaluate what they're doing with data, to look at their assets and to rebuild up. And I think what we're finding is that there's huge value in those in the data publishers are collecting.
From out of the blue question, what about the idea of a single sign-on across publisher assets?
Yeah, so it always gets discussed. So we look at single sign-on at news, like across news properties. So The Sun is in the process of rolling out single sign-on across all of its kind of brand extensions, so The Sun, Dream Team, Sun Savers, etc. It's hard to see if it will ever materialise at a cross-publisher level.
I mean, you answered your own question there. The fact The Sun is doing it across The Sun's properties doesn't mean that news can do it across all their properties, because where's the crossover? So it kind of makes single sign-on then become... rudimentary, right?
So I mean, we have the Ozone project, which for me feels like the best opportunity for publishers to collectively try and but it's tricky. I mean hopefully it will happen. I think publishers would love to see it happen, but as is the case with many kind of alliances historically, like they are very hard to get off the ground and to kind of get traction.
It's tricky. Any other particular sort of issues or challenges that you are focused on at the moment?
Silence.
Yeah. Sounds like you got everything under control then. Okie dokie.
I might sing for you too.
Sound guys giving us the big thumbs down.
But one thing we talked about before the podcast was passerby traffic and what that means. First of all, explain to us, what the hell is passerby traffic? What are you talking about?
Oh, so I think that the alongside privacy, two massive macro trends in the web in general have one been this shift to mobile. So rather than users spending 30 minutes with publishers, a lot of users are spending 30 seconds. The second thing has been because of Google and because of primarily Facebook, rather than users visiting once a week or once a day, many users come in once every 60, 90 days. And those users form this pattern of behavior, very infrequent visitors for very short periods of time, but they form like 20 to 80% of a publisher's audience. So it can be this huge chunk of audience, which right now just goes missing on the web. So all these platforms are too slow to keep up with those users, which means there's this huge chunk of the web, which isn't invisible because of privacy. It's invisible because it's coming and going too quickly. And alongside all this, all the issues around privacy, actually, this passerby traffic for publishers is a huge problem because it's really hard to monetize.
you say like is invisible because of it's just you can't get there quickly enough.
Exactly.
You'd sort of think, well, because a lot of it comes from Google with AMP and obviously Facebook, that it's their fault that you guys can't get read on this data. So that's not the case then. It's not thanks to Google and Facebook you can't get read of it, it's because it's so quick and fleeting.
Exactly. So right. There's this traffic which is so fleeting, but the platforms of old weren't designed to keep up with them, which means that for publishers it's this really hard to monetize chunk of audience. And actually the way in which we've been working with publishers to solve this is actually just get a lot faster. If you can be quick enough to understand them, you can monetize them too.
How fast are you?
I was about to say, how's that going?
Yeah, so I mean, we've just about to start working with Permative to solve that exact problem. So if you look at The Sun as one example, like we're a prime example of kind of like the passerby challenge. We generate huge, like vast volumes of audience. Like last month, we reached 34 million people in the UK. Like, you're never ever going to have 34 million people.
That's half the population.
Exactly. You're never going to have like the entire like that entire sort of pool of users super engaged, like spending 5 minutes on your site. We're 90% mobile. Like, so to Joe's point, like it's when you have that amount of people and you're so mobile dominant, you're never going to have like huge like average engagement lengths. So for us, like passerby traffic is a massive issue because we can't monetize those first impressions anywhere near as effectively as we can kind of like our smaller kind of like real kind of like loyal brand advocates who come back regularly that we have huge kind of amounts of data on, and therefore the value of those users is a lot higher. For us it's a massive challenge. On The Sun, on The Times, it's kind of like the opposite. Like we have like insane engagement on The Times, but we haven't really found a way of really capitalizing on that engagement. Like a CPM ad model doesn't lend itself to actually capitalizing from a commercial perspective on high engagement. So we're looking at ways in which we kind of better capitalize on that in the future.
Yeah. Okay, I kind of feel like we're getting crowded out
here.
We're
getting busy.
Moved into the meeting room next to us. The noise in the background at Demexco is really starting to rise. So I reckon, unfortunately, we're going to have to call it to a close. But that was highly enjoyable, guys.
Thank you very much, guys,
for being our first Demexco podcast. And well done to Sound Guy over there.
Thank you, Sound Guy.
Shout out to Sound Guy. Thanks very much, guys. That was this week's Mad Tech podcast.